Welcome to a Single Serving Podcast. I'm your host, Shaney Silver. I started this podcast because whenever I saw content for single women, it was about dating, how to date better, how to survive dating, and I know that we deserve more than that. So I created this podcast to change the way being single is seen, discussed, and felt, and I'm so happy to have you here with me. I hope you'll also consider joining the Facebook group for this podcast. It's become a really supportive community full of people sharing stories and encouraging one another and actually meeting up in real life too. There are three main ways that you can support this podcast. The first is simply share it. Share it with someone who needs to hear it, share it with your family, share it with your friends, anybody who could use a change in perspective when it comes to being single. The second way is you can rate and review this podcast on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds and it's a huge deal that really helps podcasters get more visibility and continue to do their work. And then the third way is you can become a patron of mine on Patreon. Patreon is a platform that helps independent creators earn money for creating the work that people enjoy. So there are multiple tiers that you can join, but my favorite one is a $5 tier that comes with an extra bonus episode of this podcast every single month. So there will be a link to it below. Check it out. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. Hello to this community. How are you? It is your host, Shaney Silver, coming to you live, well, not really, but kind of from, let's call it week 976 of quarantine, because that's what it feels like. I don't know what to tell you. Losing a marble or two over here today. And if you are too, welcome to a Single Serving Podcast. I am really happy to share this episode with you today. Shocker, met my guest on Twitter. You might have heard me discuss with last week's guest, Anto, who is a friend of mine in real life. You might have heard us talk about the WhatsApp group that we have been members of since the beginning of quarantine. And there are 6 people in that group, very intimate, and we're all friends and were before. And my guest today, Angelica Malin, I always want to say her name wrong. Her name is Angelica Malin. There we go. I found her on Twitter. She was, I think I was following her before just because we kind of work and write in similar spheres, but she was talking about the WhatsApp group that she's a member of, and I think it's got something like 40 people in it, and it came together at the beginning of quarantine, and it has just really been supportive for her and for the people in it. And what I like about her group is that she started it herself, and as you'll hear in the episode, she set sort of like boundaries or guidelines for the group, because she sort of made the group what she wanted it to be right from the start. And then every member of the group has filled it with really supportive content that fits within those guidelines. And it's been really helpful for her as a single person. And so I wanted to talk to her about that and her perspective. And I also wanted to talk to her because she is an independent entrepreneur who founded an online publication. And I know that a lot of us as single people are entrepreneurial as well. And if you, especially during quarantine, if you're thinking about starting something new or creating a new side hustle, things like that, I wanted to get her perspective on sort of building something yourself that you wanted to do because you wanted to do it. I really like that spirit about her and about all of us, really. So it's a really fun episode. I hope you enjoy it. I hope everyone is staying very safe and very healthy. There is still a global pandemic afoot. I wish there wasn't, but there totally is. If you are, what does Sarah Powell call it? Having a bit of a wobble. If you are having a bit of a wobble, you are not alone. I'm getting really sick of this shit. I'm really sick of being this alone, this by myself. It's very, very difficult after this much time. And I don't want you guys thinking this is super easy for me because I talk about how great it is to be single and how much I enjoy it. I still enjoy it and I still think it's great, but I would like to go do something with another person. That sounds nice. I don't know what that is. A walk, a picnic. I have no idea. Got cat cafe. That sounds great, but that can't happen because germs. Anyway, you're not alone in your wobbles. You have community here and you have people who are feeling the same way you're feeling right here. So don't feel alone is what I'm saying. Especially don't feel alone if you're a member of the Facebook group, because there are literally thousands. I can say that now because there are 2,300 of us in there. We're all supporting each other and communicating with each other and celebrating the things that we want to celebrate. So I strongly encourage you, if you are listening to this podcast and you have not sworn off Facebook forever, I encourage you to join the Facebook group for this podcast. If you are not a Facebook person, you can also follow the podcast on Instagram, or you can follow me on Instagram, more specifically my cat on Instagram. And you can also follow me on Twitter if you don't like Instagram or Facebook because they're owned by the same people. I don't know. Do whatever you want to do, but I'm on Twitter as well. I'm also on Medium, where you can read lots of essays on the topic of being single and how annoyed I get with the way that being single is sort of seen and treated in society. I tend to write a lot about it on Medium as well. And you should check out shaneysilver.com because that's another thing I do because I have time on my hands. I do custom content for single people. I think about what we need, what we like, what we deserve, what we enjoy, and I write content that's just for us. So please feel free to check it out on shaneysilver.com. And what else do I want to tell you today? What I want to tell you is if you are a patron of mine on Patreon, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. Thank you for supporting me, this podcast, all of the work that goes into it. You are amazing human beings. Thank you for being a part of my Patreon. If you are not yet a patron and you would like more information about that, there is a link to it in the show notes. Basically, what it is Patreon allows independent creators to be supported by those who consume their content. So I have a couple different tiers of membership up there for you guys. There's a $3 a month tier, which is essentially just you saying thank you to me for all of the work that goes into this podcast, which I appreciate so much. And there is a $5 tier that also comes with a once a month bonus episode of the podcast. It's a solo episode, so it's just me. And for much of those episodes, I answer questions that come in from patrons. If you are a patron and you send me a question or a discussion topic, I answer it every time. So please feel free to get in touch at asingleservingpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can message me directly through Patreon and your questions will be included in the next bonus episode. There's also one more tier. It is a $85 a month tier, and that is for a 1 hour video chat with me. We can discuss anything you like. Common topics include reframing your mindset around being single. We've also been known to discuss Lacey Phillips' work, which I talk about quite a bit. And essentially anything that you want to discuss as a member of this community and a listener of this podcast, the hour is yours to do with what you would like. So those three tiers are up there for you. I'm also working on some new ones, so there will be cool stuff coming up this summer, hopefully. But anyway, if you are a patron, thank you. If you are a listener, thank you. If you are someone who has sent this to a friend ever, thank you. If you've ever sent this to your parents because it's easier than having tough discussions with them about being single, I see you, believe me. So thank you to all of you for listening, for supporting the podcast, for sharing the podcast. I think you're fantastic. I also think it's fantastic when you rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts because that's a nice thing. I am going to stop talking into a microphone now, and I'm going to go and edit the episode so that you can listen to it, because I know that's why you're here. So I'm going to get to the good stuff now. I hope everybody is doing well. I love you very much. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Angelica Malin, hi. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I love having Twitter-based relationships on the podcast because that generally means that people become my friend in real life. And that's basically the whole impetus for me starting a podcast in the first place, was I wanted friends. So welcome to the podcast.
There you go. And it's nice when good stuff comes out of Twitter because I feel like most of the time it's not good stuff. So the occasional gem you have to hold on to.
I completely agree. There are diamonds in the dumpster fire if you look hard enough. And so this is one of them for me. Tell everyone who's listening, tell them what you would want them to know about you as we start our conversation. This is kind of an upgrade from the basic where are you from that Salma El-Wardani helped me edit into a far better question. So what would you like this audience to know about you?
Okay, so I'm Angelica. I'm 29 and a half. And I feel like the half is important because you know what? When we're younger, we get obsessed with halves. You know, we always were 5 and a half or 6 and a half, and then that suddenly stops. And I've decided, maybe it's because I'm a bit panicky about being 30, that I'm now 29 and a half. I run a magazine and do festivals and events and podcasts and all kinds of things. I'm one of those multifaceted journalists. I'm recently single, which I think is relevant to this podcast, having come out of a very long-term relationship just before lockdown. So it's an interesting time, I think, in my personal life as well as in professional life. It kind of, I feel like COVID has thrown so much into the air, and in a way it's created this amazing kind of space to like reevaluate everything career-wise, personal life-wise. It's just created the space where you have to really sit with yourself and sit with your emotions. So that's been kind of a big part of my journey during this pandemic.
Fantastic. And if I can tell you anything about the 30s, I'm newly 38, and you couldn't pay me to go back a decade. You really couldn't. It's the 30s have been a genuine delight, such that they have made me fear my 40s less, because they've been so much better than the 20s, and I've known myself so much better, and I've known what I want so much more, and I've come to an understanding of what I deserve so much more during the 30s. I'm like, great, I can't wait to see what is ahead with the 40s. And you start to realize how negatively age has been painted as you hit further and further ages. And you're like, what is the big deal? What was everybody bitching about before? Like, it's just, I feel like there's a new, people love to say things like 30 is the new, or 40 is the new 30, or bullshit like that. No, 40 is still 40. It just was never as bad as people made it out to be.
Yeah. And I have found, as I've progressed through my 20s, from my early 20s to my late 20s, how much happier I've been in myself. And so much of the things that I thought were like my attitude for the rest of my life, they were things that just happened in my early 20s, because I was still kind of finding myself and being, even small things like wanting to always wear makeup. And there was just stuff that I just grew out of. And I think it's true, just as you get older, you just feel more comfortable in your skin. So I'm not terrified of turning 30. I just think I've put something in my head around that number.
Oh, for sure. We all have. We've been fed so much grooming. Like, this whole podcast is a dismantling of grooming. That's what you're on right now. That's what's happening in this discussion. Before I go any further, though, I would like to ask you, how are you? I know that you recently had surgery, and I just wanted to check in on you and see how you're feeling.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm absolutely fine. It was unexpected. I had it very quickly after I had an MRI, but I'm fine. I think if we're thinking about singleness again, I think it is one of the things that you don't necessarily prepare for on your own. And that's something that I've learned, and I've also grown through a little bit, is when you're faced with major life things like going into hospital or unexpected illness, and you do live alone or you're not in a relationship, where that can be quite a challenge. And that's been something that has been surprising, and like, you get through and you learn things from it. But yeah, I'm okay. Thank you for checking.
I'm so glad to hear it. And you're right, that is a major and recurring theme among this single audience, and probably every single audience, is like, what happens if something happens to you, if you're sick, if you're unable to care for yourself or for your pets or something like that, what do you do? And I've learned, as I've aged a bit, that you can ask way more of your friends than we are comfortable asking. So I have sort of like contingency plans in place with very dear friends of mine who know, like, and it's ironic that we're having this conversation, because my WhatsApp group knows that if I'm not responding for like more than 24 hours, like, somebody call an ambulance, like, something's wrong with her. So it's nice to have people to that are aware of you all the time and can sort of check in on you and see how you're doing. But also, when things go awry, that you can ask more of your friends than we do. I meant to share with this audience, and I will in the show notes, there is a great there's a great podcast episode with Glynis McNichol. What is the name? You know what? I'm going to look it up right now while you're sitting in front of me, because it is so good. And it speaks to like that very thing. Mm-hmm. Like, what, like contingency plans. Like, what do you do if? I listened to this yesterday and now I cannot find it. My friend Emily sent it to me and it's so good. I will probably either edit all of this out or leave it all in. I am not sure which one I'm going to do.
Either way.
Right? So my friend Emily sent me a podcast called Everything Is Fine. And Everything Is Fine is outstanding. It is meant for women over 40, but I'm 38, so I feel like I'm on the cusp and it's fine. But this week's episode is with Glynis McNichol, and she's an author that was on this podcast very early on. She's absolutely outstanding, just a wonderful human being. And one of the hosts said to her, you know, I often wonder, I don't have children and I don't know who's going to take care of me when I'm old. And Glynis didn't miss a beat. She was like, having children is no guarantee of having someone to take care of you. And that is so true. So I would encourage everyone, if you are ill, if you are in need of help or whatever, like, kids are not a guarantee, but your friends can be more of a resource than I think we have been groomed to believe they are.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that I've learned going through that experience is what happens sometimes after you come out of a relationship and you find yourself single is things shift. And actually what you end up doing is that you don't put all of everything on this one relationship and this one person who's going to be like your perfect travel partner and the person that's going to look after you after surgery and everything that you need in a person and one person. What you do is you spread it out between friends, between family, and you find that you have certain people for certain things. Like I have one friend who has come over like 3 times with a little Tupperware of dinner for me and has just sorted me out, and I have another friend who's like my best friend in the world and she's helped me shower. And there are friendships for different things and family for different things, and that's what shifts. And actually something I've learned from that is that you have to try and do that even if you're in a relationship. You have to still try and maintain those things, because you can end up putting a huge amount of onus on this one central relationship, and then if that does, God forbid, disappear, you find that you perhaps have neglected some of those friendships, or you haven't really given someone a chance to show up for you in the way that you need.
That is just the wisest piece of information. And I was going to tell you earlier too, even if you were in a relationship, you would still be welcome on this podcast. There is a bit of a misconception that I don't like people when they're in relationships, or I don't want to like have friends that are in relationships or guests that are in relationships, but I absolutely do. This is a space for everybody. I think being more comfortable being single is something that you can do even while you're in a relationship, because I think it can eliminate so much fear and anxiety around being alone, just to be more aware of how lovely time on your own is.
But I know you've had Chez on the show talking about alonement, and that's the whole thing, is that you can still bring that sense of alonement even when you're in a relationship, and that's really important, that separate space.
Yes, Francesca Spector, and I will link to her episode in the show notes also, because I had so much fun talking with her. I really love what she's doing and I really admire it. I think we've also been sort of fed that acknowledging our aloneness is sad or pathetic in some way. And it's not. It's elegant. It's really elegant to be someone who's, you know what, this is actually lovely and here's why. But what has been your just sort of like high level experience of single adulthood? I like to get everyone's perspective on it. And I like a new question that I'm sort of floating. It's like, what is your like ideal outcome, essentially? Like if you, like right now my singlehood is an outcome that I'm living in that I'm loving very much. The only way that I want to change this outcome of my life would be to find my partner and get married to a husband who also did not want children but definitely wants pets. That sort of thing is like my ideal situation, and I'm not willing to stop being single until I find that right situation for me. So I'm curious as to what your experience with singlehood has been, and what is sort of that like ideal outcome for you, if you're comfortable sharing it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I will caveat it that it's been quite a short time in comparison to the time I was in a relationship. And I think I'm still very much going through it of kind of that questioning that happens after you come out of a relationship where you're like, who am I anymore? What am I? What do I like? And I was actually quite surprised by how deeply I felt that. There's a lot of questioning of the things, the way I was spending my time and the things that I was into and like personal aspirations. I think you can fall into a place in a relationship where everything becomes very tangled together, and it can be amazing and powerful, and you can have shared visions and shared dreams and goals. But there can be an element of that where you give up too much of that and you kind of forget your sense of self and what you actually want personally and what you're excited by and where you want to live. And some of that stuff can just get lost in the process. So I think where I'm at the moment and where I'm trying to get to is actually just to step back into myself and kind of re-find the things that make me me. I think I lost it a little bit, which can just really easily happen when you're used to kind of compromising and being dependent on someone. So that's one thing. And I think also learning to do stuff again. I for example, like I don't like cooking. I never really have. I've just managed to survive by always being in relationships where someone will cook for me. And then I realized I got to 29 and a half. And then during lockdown, I was like, if I don't learn to cook something, no one's going to feed me. And that was a huge wake up call of like, okay, I need to try. And I'm not there at all. I have no interest in it whatsoever. I was not baking any banana bread, but I am trying. And it's kind of just like stepping into that independence of it, of being able to do stuff without the reliance of someone else. So I don't have a set outcome, but I think like you said, just being happy alone, and then anyone else is like a great addition to your life, but rather than seeing it as like your life has this huge void and this hole and you just want to put something in it, because it's like that whole phrase, like your other half, which is what we need to step away from. Like, we're not half of a whole, we're a whole. I used to call my partner my additional third, because I was like, you're here, but I'm 100% and you're my third, and that's okay. So whenever anyone would say, how's your other half? And I'd be like, oh, my additional third.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, he didn't love it. But I think that's what we have to see, because otherwise the danger is that you just end up settling and you fill it with someone because you're scared of being alone and you don't want to learn to cook for yourself and you don't want to go to a wedding alone. So you're just like, well, anyone is better than that. And that's where a lot of problems can arise. So I think it's just being happy as is your base level.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. That's such a base level isn't something we give a lot of time to. We think about beyond the base level. We think about the happiest version we could possibly be. And we tend to assign relationship status to that and need that in order to be that optimum level of happiness. But the base level of happiness of knowing yourself, knowing what you want, what you don't want, what you will compromise on and what you won't compromise on, setting that line for yourself and getting to know that line for yourself really well and being very, very happy and comfortable and confident and calm at that base level, I think only serves to improve your singlehood and your relationships both.
I think calm is a very powerful word in that, in what you've said, because I think what happens, especially as you get older, is you can feel a sense of panic. And it's often because you see friends of a similar age doing all the things that are expected of you. And that can, if you're a woman and you see your friends having kids or getting engaged and getting married, you can feel a sense of panic. And I think the calmness is really important, that it comes at the right time, and having an attitude of calm actually leads you to a better future with someone, because you are approaching it with calm and not just, I need to find someone right now.
Absolutely. I hate the sense of urgency and the panic and the like dog paddling toward a solution kind of a thing. And I also understand that I come from a huge place of privilege there, because I don't want to have children. So there is no sort of biological engine running there that like is driving me towards something. But the more calm that can be instilled into the time we spend as singles, I think it serves us very well. I was going to tell you, I didn't start cooking until after I turned 30. Before that, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no desire to cook whatsoever. It didn't intrigue me at all. And then I started and now I'm obsessed. So there is potential to enjoy cooking in the future. Just coming from somebody who couldn't be bothered to somebody who now Instagrams about it daily, there's potential is what I'm saying.
I think there's something deeper there with food as well, because it's for me, and it's something that I've realized across the board on different themes, is the idea that sharing something with a romantic partner is what makes the experience. And my relationship with cooking is not because I don't like eating nice food. It's because during lockdown, I was like, do I really want to cook for one? Is this an enjoyable experience? And that's something that you really have to go through reframing in your mind. And it's the same thing with holidays, with all sorts of things. Like, we put such a pressure on, like, if we have a romantic partner, this will be so much better. And this experience is only something I can do if it's shared. And I guess what you have to do is try and enjoy those experiences regardless, and do those things and cook for yourself and clean up and everything.
Absolutely. And it's a lot better than you think it is. It's a lot more enjoyable than it's painted publicly. And it's a lot easier to cut a recipe in half than you think. And everyone has a freezer. You know what I mean? It's, you learn how to do things. You learn how to find joy in things, and you start to see really rapidly, at least in my experience, that when you really take it all in and appreciate it, instead of seeing what's lacking in it, it's already good. It's already so good. There's just so much. I love what I do. I love just telling people that this is really nice. Like, being on your own can be really nice. It's not this horrific failure of a, you know, it's not sad, is I think what I try to get across, is it's not sad unless you can't see beyond the sadness. If you refuse to see beyond the sadness, if you refuse to reframe or try to reframe or put effort into seeing your life as a whole, complete, valid space, it can be really sad. But I hope that discussions like these will help people reframe. So yay. Selfish question, because I know what you do for a living and it intrigues the hell out of me. please tell everyone what is About Time magazine.
Sure. So we're a lifestyle site. We cover anything It's About Time You Tried in London and beyond. I've done it since 2014. And we also host events and festivals in London. It has been a challenging business to run in this climate, I will not lie to you, because obviously people aren't going out very much. So we had to shift a lot with what we do. And we've weathered it. But yeah, it's definitely difficult when you're used to writing about restaurants and workouts and all the fun stuff to do in London. And then that's the kind of core of your business. And then everyone's inside. It is challenging. But, you know, that's the thing of being an entrepreneur. And you face these challenges as you pivot.
How do you create an actual publication?
It's a process of just working out kind of what your audience is, who you're trying to talk to, and how, and then where they're hanging out on the internet and what the best channels are. I think when you build communities, you kind of have to work backwards a little bit and think to yourself, like, who do I want in my community? And then you work out who you want in your community. And then I'm like, okay, so where will I find those people? How do I talk to them? What kind of language do they like to use? And you kind of, yeah, you build from there. But usually with these things, you kind of start it and then you see what's working and what's not, and then you just push forward with the stuff that's working. So, you know, building up our audience of about 100,000 users a month was kind of just seeing what articles were popular and doing more of it. And it's just it's a kind of scale thing, and it's a consistency as well. You know, with content and with digital, same with social media, it's the consistency of consistently doing it. Even if you've only got a couple of people liking your photos, it's just that you have to keep showing up for that audience.
And have you always been an entrepreneur, or did you do something else before this?
No, did it straight out of university. So I've never really had a job. So I think I'm very unemployable at this stage, because I don't think I ever really, don't think I could have a job, to be honest. Because I think, you know, if you're self-employed for long enough, that's it, you're done.
Well, I think it's hard to go back. I've only been self-employed for about 2.5 years, and I can't imagine going the other direction. You know what? You know, because you do this. Like, it's, when you work for yourself, it's like, what was I doing that whole time? I've had many, many jobs where I worked for other people. So seeing you build what you've built from start to now is very, very inspiring. And I hope that it's inspiring to other people who are listening, because I like to share what's possible. It's hard to do something you've never seen someone else do. So to, especially right now with the way that the publishing world is being called to answer for so much, every time I read a new story about something horrific that had happened in publishing, or and remembering things that I experienced in publishing, I keep thinking we should just burn it all down and start again. But then I remember there are publications out there who did it their way, who saw something they wanted to build and just created it and continue to create it and continue to have these healthy, wonderful, engaging, entertaining, informative spaces. So I like what you're doing very, very much. And I think that, what you're doing is what I would want to see more of. I love the independence and entrepreneurship that you have going, and I find it amazing, just FYI. And I will share it with this audience, of course, because I want them to.
Thank you. That's delightful. You have a lot more flexibility when you start something from scratch in that way, because say you need to pivot and you need to change your business model and you have to start finding new ways to monetize. If you start from scratch, it's kind of easier in that way. I think what we're seeing with publishing now is that the traditional business model is not really working. And on the day that we've recorded this, The Guardian's announced huge amounts of cuts. Oh. I think it's these models aren't working anymore. And it's really hard when you're at a very large scale to try and shift the way it works.
For sure. I saw that on Twitter this morning and it broke my heart. Absolutely broke my heart. And you know something, it always seems like it happens in turns. Like, which publication's turn is it to lay off 80 people this month? You know, there was a time when it was happening pretty frequently in New York, and there were actually WhatsApp groups of writers and editors who were still employed at a publication who were literally buying beers for all of the ones laid off at another publication. They were like pooling their money and like buying beers for everyone that had just been laid off that day, just sort of like as a bit of like comfort and solidarity that I thought was really, really remarkable. But it happens to absolutely everybody. So I have a lot of respect to people who are doing their own thing in publishing and who are building something they want to build the way they want to build it. I think that's really cool.
The models just need to change, basically.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. So to get to the core of why I wanted to talk to you in the first place, we connected because I saw a tweet about a WhatsApp group that you have been a part of during quarantine. I too am part of one, but mine is pretty small scale. It's 6 people total. And Yours is not. So I would like you to describe your WhatsApp group to everybody.
Sure. So I think it was like a week into lockdown. And I realized that I was slightly losing the plot because I hadn't really lived alone before. And I obviously hadn't had any social interaction. And I think what I realized I was missing was not like the deep friendships where you know you've got that person to call when you're like crying or you've got someone that you know in the emergency, but it was just the day-to-day interactions, those like little conversations where you're like sharing a photo of your dinner or being like, how are you doing? And it was that kind of water cooler thing that you might normally get in a co-working space or an office, and that was what I was really missing. So I put it on Twitter and I was like, I'm living alone, I don't know if anyone else like needs this, but if you're living alone, I'm going to start a WhatsApp group. So it was complete strangers, and I was inundated with people being like, I want to join. So there's about 40 of us, and it's shifted during lockdown. Like, some people have left, more people have joined. It's always changing. It is quite kind of fast moving. So it's definitely not for everyone, because when you've got that many people, it can be quite overwhelming, but you can just, you know, check in when you want to. But it's been really lovely and just kind of a testament to the power of strangers to come together when it's needed and to kind of connect and share. And actually, people have been pretty vulnerable in it, which I originally thought it would be something where we'd just be sharing our baking and like what we were watching and stuff like that. But we've had quite a lot of people who've gone through work redundancies, people that have gone through kind of like hard things in relationships and stuff like that, and yeah, it's been a really beautiful like space. And you know, a lot of people who are living alone have really struggled during this time, so to be there, I think that's one of the things that hasn't been talked about enough is if you're living alone, you might have gone 3 months without actually having anyone to interact with face to face. And it is quite maddening, no matter how strong you are.
Completely.
So we've kind of been there for each other. I mean, I've just been talking to my houseplants a lot. And yeah, it's been really nice. And I think I've learned a lot about, you don't need to live in the same city and you don't need to be the same age, and you can still really connect with people.
I find that WhatsApp is almost like a person. It's almost like having somebody around you all the time, because it's this spontaneous interaction that you did not have to generate. When you are living alone, obviously, like if you need something or crave something or want something, you have to be the one who is responsible for acquiring it, whatever that is, support or comfort of any kind. And when you pool efforts into a WhatsApp group of multiple people who all need those things, you end up providing them to each other. And because it's digital and it's within such an easy platform in terms of UX, it's almost like this self-generating support that just keeps giving very easily, which I found absolutely sanity saving during lockdown. As soon as I saw your tweet, I was like, people are doing this. People mm-hmm. are seeing the value of coming together in this capacity, and really, really finding comfort there. So how do you think that this group has made you feel supported during quarantine, or what is support that you've been able to provide for other members of the group?
I think it's just the small conversations. It's like when you just want to like be like, what are you up to? And there's small things we've done, like on Fridays, often people will, on a Friday kind of after work, people will just share a photo of what they're drinking. And so everyone will be sharing like what they're having that night. And it's just kind of a small way of feeling some kinship and like you're part of something socially in a physical sense, even though you're not. So, you know, people will go along and be like, I'm now on this wine, or, you know, I'm listening to this music and this is what I'm eating. And it just provides a sense of, yeah, a sense of community, I suppose. And, you know, because most of the people in the group are single, it's not something I'd necessarily do with most of my friends who are in relationships. And I know that they're with their partner on a Friday night and they're not going to want to be on their phone. So I found with the group, there are people who actually are on their phone when the rest of the world feels like they're not. And that's when they need it the most, which is really nice. So it's kind of weekends and after work, which is when I normally wouldn't actually be in touch with my friends because they're with their partners. This is when a group like that can really come in handy.
For sure. There are so many moments where I think single people can feel forgotten. And if you gather them all in one place, we're not forgetting about each other at all. And there has not been enough, in my opinion, there has not been enough effort made to join single people together. The number one most frequent question I get, either privately or within my podcast Facebook group, is how do I make new friends? It is without question the most prevalent thought for us. It's it's so funny. And maybe this is just because of the community that I built and how much I like bark into the internet, but I never get asked, how do I meet someone? I always get asked, how do I make new friends? And maybe that is the legacy that I leave on this earth. But that question, just the fact that you're asking it, makes me happy, because I love that we as single people are putting effort into something other than dating, and other, or in addition to dating. It doesn't have to be the sole focus. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I mean, most of the time that single people are gathered together is to end singleness. It's dating events and stuff like that. And it's not really ever really in celebration of singleness or just it in appreciation of it. It does feel like singleness is something that you try and end, but it's not a status by choice. And I think things like this WhatsApp group are ways of just stepping into your singleness and owning it and being like, this is what I'm making for dinner. And also accepting that sometimes it is lonely and sometimes you do need those small little conversations, but it's not like trying to end it. And I think, you know, a lot of the work that I've been doing internally since I've not been in a relationship is being okay with it. And I didn't realize how much of that stigma I had internalized through the years, that being single was the unwanted choice. It was the destination that no one really wants to get to. And actually, it's much better to be in a relationship. And I'm undoing and unlearning a lot of that, because it doesn't really serve you. And like we talked about with the panic, but I do think that we need to change the whole conversation around being single, and that it can be an empowered choice rather than something that happens to you.
You bring up such a good point, that internalization of the fact that if you're single, that's something that has to change. Has to change. There has to be a relationship in your life, or else you are missing something. That messaging is very dangerous. And I think it leads to a lot of settling and a lot of just taking what you can get and operating in a world thinking, well, you know, this guy's here. I know he only texts me back once every 3 days, but he does text back once every 3 days. I mean, I know he only texts me one word, but at least he texts me one word. Like, we settle for such scraps because the default setting, if you combine all of the societal messaging we've received from day one until now, the societal messaging is you should be in a relationship. And that can be very, very damaging to self-esteem over time if you simply can't find one. And it is, in my opinion, very difficult in the modern dating landscape to really connect with someone, which is so odd given that there are so many ways for us now to have access to greater numbers of human beings through dating apps, obviously, things like that. But I'm finding a lack of real connection in the single ether. Yeah.
The depth is hard. The depth is definitely hard. I think it's probably linked. I think the amount of people you can connect with, it all becomes quite disposable. So you're connecting on a much more insincere like level and superficial level. I think it's almost like if you had less people, you'd put more into it. But if you're talking to 15 people on Hinge at the same time, you're going to give all of those conversations a couple of lines and everyone's doing the same. So it's kind of, it kind of creates the problem, doesn't it? That doesn't make anything very special. And when we're in a world where we can't connect as much in face-to-face time as we once could, you're not going to kind of meet someone in a bar at the moment because you've got to book in with your friends and give your address here in the UK. So we're relying on these digital platforms a lot, and they can feel quite superficial, I think.
They feel so cold and distant, or they felt that way. I haven't been on them since January of 2019, but they used to feel very cold and distant and fake. It did not feel like I was actually speaking to anybody. They may have very well all been bots, but they might as well have been bots for how much connection I was actually having with people. But back to WhatsApp, I think the reason that I like it as a support system for single people is that it's replicable. There aren't a lot of replicable scenarios when people give you dating advice, because how do you tell somebody where to be and when to be in order to meet somebody that they're going to connect with? It's very, very difficult to do, if not impossible. But you can replicate making new friends. You can replicate digital support systems like WhatsApp. So, how do you suggest that other people go about forming digital communities? I know you did yours on Twitter, and I strongly suggest that as well, because it's obviously led to good things for you, but I think you might have a slightly bigger Twitter audience than most listeners. How do you suggest that other people go about forming digital support communities like this?
I think it's a couple of things. I think the first one is just working out, what is it that you need? Like, be slightly selfish and be like, what is it that I really need? And then try and find people that need the same. But I think if you're kind of answering your own need, you will create something naturally a lot more authentic. So with this, I really wasn't thinking, it wasn't a work thing. It wasn't like I was trying to sell a product or a service. I was just like, God, I really need a bit of chat. And then, so, you know, listen to those needs, listen to those kind of inner soul callings. That's one thing I'd say. And then I think the other thing is just about vulnerability. I think mutual vulnerability is the thickener of relationships. Like that's what Brené Brown says, that that's the thing that allows us to create bonds. And this WhatsApp group only really worked because everyone was very mutually vulnerable. When one of the girls in it got made redundant, she was saying how much she was struggling, and then we could all rally. Had she have decided not to take that into a quite public forum, we wouldn't have been able to be there. So I think creating a space where you can to be vulnerable is really important. So kind of creating something with sensitivity. So there's one thing I would say when I started it in the notes of the group, I said, like, we're not going to share any negative COVID stories. And there's no swearing, and it's just a positive space. So everyone stuck to those rules, but I really didn't want to create something that was like a lot of my other friend WhatsApp groups, that was a lot of fear mongering and the kind of stuff that my mum sends me. This was something totally different. And I think, you know, if you're starting something, you can also set the tone and you can create a space where everyone feels safe.
Absolutely. And there are a variety of ways to do it, not just WhatsApp, though I do wholeheartedly recommend it. I don't know if you follow a woman on Instagram named Sarah Powell.
No.
She is also based in London, and she does a live Instagram stream twice a week called 11sies. And it's at 11, and she makes a cup of tea and sits down on her couch and does an Instagram live. And roughly about 120 to 130 people join twice a week. And it's just, she starts out by saying, what's everyone eating? What's everyone drinking? Like for breakfast. And everyone's like, I have a giant coffee. Or I have like, the funny ones are like, I'm eating an entire packet of Hobnobs for breakfast. How's that? Like that sort of thing. And then she goes on to ask people what they're celebrating. And she doesn't just mean the huge ones, like I got a new job or something like that. She means like the everyday, like I did laundry and it's 11 a.m. Like that sort of like the smaller celebrations that she's putting importance behind to help people sort of cope with this time. It all was born out of quarantine. But I really like that as well. I like the digital community that she's formed just by doing an Instagram live. It's the digital resources we have are legion. And I think if we didn't have them, we would be having a very, very difficult time as single people who live alone.
Totally, totally. And I think you have to show up for those things as if you would an actual kind of date, whether it's kind of like getting dressed, changing out of your tracksuit. I've found it's so easy if you're not in a space where anyone can see you to just totally slob out the whole time. Oh, yeah. And it has such an effect on your mood and on your productivity. So like learning to wake up, have a shower, put some makeup on, even if I knew no one was going to see me in the day, massively changes things. So even if you're joining that 11sies, you know, treat it like an actual date in your diary and show up for it properly.
Absolutely. It's 6 a.m. for me. So I tend to show up in my pajamas, but she doesn't have to know. It's fine. I think she's just happy that people are joining from various places in the world. So that's okay. I've taken to a midday self-care shower. Whenever I'm just feeling like absolutely miserable and terrible, I take a shower at like, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the afternoon and use all the fancy products in my shower. Like it's just whatever you need in that moment. I texted my best friend the first time I did it. I was like, do you ever feel the need to just shower and start everything over again? And she was like, literally every day. So it's working for us.
The shower is a powerful thing.
It's epic. And I tried to replace it with a bath the other day because I was like, well, right. I was like, I don't have outside space. I can't have a baby pool in the backyard as much as I want one. Maybe I'll just pretend the bathtub is a pool for a little while. And the amount of effort that I had to put into scrubbing the tub before I could take a bath almost made me not take a bath. I was like, I'm now too tired to do a very relaxing thing. Like that's how bad it was to try to get like, in the bathtub.
The shower is very energizing, whereas the bath is very relaxing. If you had a bath halfway through the day, it would just ruin the rest of the day.
I agree. If this had been a weekday, it wouldn't have happened, but it was on a weekend. So I still made the bath happen, but I had to like, coax myself into it with treats. So I literally was like watching stand-up comedy. I set my laptop on a stool outside the bath and put stand-up comedy on, and I had a bowl of cherries perched on the edge of the tub. So I was like, now I can enjoy this. Now I'm willing to fill up a tub and take a bath.
Dreamy.
It was so great. It was absolutely lovely. I highly recommend it. It is worth scrubbing your tub out. I'm sorry to say, you're going to have to get in there with sponges. It's gonna suck for about 15 minutes. And then it will be really worth it after that. You are also a podcaster. And I'm just curious, who have you spoken to recently that has knocked your socks off? I really love talking to other podcasters and finding out about their process and who they've spoken to.
Yeah. One of the ones that stands out for me is I spoke to Shiru Azadi at the start of lockdown for a podcast, who is the author of The Kindness Method. And she's an expert in self-kindness, which I think is kind of perfect for right now, because we all need to be kinder to ourselves. And she also lives alone. So it was a very insightful conversation about what she does to kind of amplify her self-kindness during living alone. And actually, the things that you said about watching stand-up in the bath and eating cherries is exactly what she told to me, which was to treat yourself as a guest in your own house. And that's what I've been doing. So she was like, you know, lay out your towel for after you come out the shower, or like put your clothes on the radiator and make yourself a nice meal, put a candle on when you're eating dinner. And those small things, I felt a bit silly at the start, but they really do make a difference to the way in which you treat yourself. So I've been treating myself as a guest in my own flat and making sure that it feels nice and fresh, and that you do those nice things even just for yourself. So I'd recommend listening to that episode, but she was one of the guests that really helped me reframe a lot of those things. And we talked about cooking and food as well.
I'm so happy to hear you say Shiru, because I heard her on Deliciously Ella, and then I saw that she was on your podcast, and I reached out to her, and she's going to be on this one as well.
Perfect.
I cannot wait to chat with her. It sounds like so much fun, but you're right. And I fully am on board with the, upping the kindness you show yourself around the house. There is no more saving for best, because you are best. There's like the things that you were saving for a rainy day, or that you like, everything can be enjoyed by you right now. And I find that especially with women, we're kind of taught to just like treat other people better than we treat ourselves. And I don't agree with that. I think especially if you are single, especially if you are living alone during quarantine, showing yourself kindness and care and like really good things, like really, and I don't mean necessarily things that you have to buy, but just like if you're exhausted in the middle of your workday, read a book for 30 minutes, or sit and do nothing for 30 minutes, or meditate, or do some yoga, just like something gentle and kind for yourself that might feel like an indulgence at first. It's not indulgent to treat yourself well. It's necessary.
I think also sometimes self-kindness is forgiving yourself a bit of tough love. So sometimes you know what you need to do, and it's something you might dread. It might be like a HIIT workout, or it might be like even leaving the house. You know, those points of lockdown where I was like, no one's seeing me. Nobody knows if I've left the house. I'll just not leave the house. And you know, it's not good for your mental health. And like when it was a stage where we could only go for one walk a day, sometimes I wasn't taking them. And sometimes it's serving yourself up a bit of tough love and making yourself do the things that you know make you feel better. And there's really basic things, just writing a list of those things, because I think you can forget them. So sometimes I'll just write a list of like, this is how I get myself out of a bad mood. And I'll have to go and consult my list on my iPhone and do one of those things. So it is being a friend to yourself, but also it's sometimes being a bit of a tough friend and not letting yourself just be super indulgent and do something that you know you, ultimately, if you spend the day like eating biscuits and watching Netflix for 10 hours, you feel rubbish afterwards. So the things that feel good in the moment aren't always the ones that serve you long term.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I love crossing things that I'm dreading off of my list, and I like celebrating crossing those things off of my list. I recently just paid all of my taxes. In the US, our taxes should be due on April 15th, but they were delayed to July 15th, which is, as we're speaking, today. And because I'm freelance, I had to do all of 2019's taxes and the first two quarters of 2020, all in one payment for both federal taxes and New York state tax. And I knew I could do it. I knew it was physically possible for me to do. I had just been putting it off and off and off and dreading it. I'm like, why am I putting this off? I could just take care of this. I could just get this off of my plate. And I did it in like 10 minutes. It took no time at all. It scared the shit out of me for some reason, but I had saved my money really well so I could handle it. And once it was done, the lift, like it's almost physical. You feel so much better and lighter and more free. Mm. And yeah, cross it off. If it's stressing you out, if it's worrying you, absolutely cross it off. I'm not a big fan of procrastination of those things, especially for single people. I feel like we have enough incoming. We have enough that's telling us that that our life is less than, or that our life is worse than. We don't need to put more on ourselves. So I would highly agree with you on the ticking of the boxes for sure for the tough stuff.
And the longer you leave that kind of stuff, the more negative self-talk you build up in your head of like, you're not capable, you can't do it. Had you have left that another week, you would have created a whole narrative around your inability to send off your taxes. So like, it, you know, don't procrastinate on the stuff that will just lead to you being critical of yourself. Because like you said, we have enough thrown our way. I think also something Sheree and I talked about was speaking to yourself out loud. And with things like that, I have found that if I literally, because she was like, you know, sometimes you know what you need to hear and you call a friend, but actually you know what you want them to say and you know what you need to hear. So like, just say it to yourself. And sometimes I mean saying it out loud to yourself, but if you can't get hold of your friend because they're in a relationship and they're busy with their boyfriend, figure out what it is that you think you need to hear and then just say it to yourself. So it might just be like sitting yourself down on the sofa and being like, you need to sort out your taxes, because in a week's time you're going to feel super stressed out. And I've actually found it's quite powerful to just speak to yourself, basically. So there's my thing. Speak to your houseplants, speak to yourself, it'll make you feel better.
I agree. I totally agree. My plants hate me. I have no idea how to care for them. I don't know what I'm doing. Whenever I look up and I happen to see that they look a little sad, that's when I water them. And they're two totally different kinds of plants with different water requirements. And they both get a bath at the exact same time. I have no idea what I'm doing, but they're cute. I guess maybe they're still here.
Do you know who Noel Fielding is?
No.
Oh, he's a celebrity in the UK. He used to be one of the presenters on the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, and yes, I do know. Yeah. Isn't he still a presenter?
I think he's still, I'm not sure when the next season is, but he has started a radio station for plants. If you put it on, it's meant to help the plants. And my friend was using it and then she stopped using it because she got a headache and she said her oregano died. So
so he knows what he's doing.
I think so. I'll find a link for you.
Thank you. That's fascinating. We have touched on quite a few, I would say, really strong coping skills for being on your own during a global pandemic. Are there any that you have that we have not addressed yet?
Well, it's funny because I had shower just down in my notes. That was all I wanted to say was like, well, actually what I wanted to say was I think one of the things that's very difficult is creating a separation of space between your work day and your relaxation time. And most of people I've spoken to, whether they live alone or not, have found that there's quite a mesh going on between the two, and finding that you're maybe doing an hour of TV halfway through your work day and then you're doing a couple of emails at 11 at night. And I think those boundaries are difficult to keep, and I have found that a shower is very good. So if I finish work at 7, that's when I have my shower, I change my clothes, and I come back into the same space that I've been working in all day, but I'm kind of trying to come into it with a different state of mind. So anything that you can do at that period between ending your work day and starting your relaxation time, whether it's a shower or a walk or a workout, I think is really important to try and create the boundaries, because that's what's going to be, I think, our challenge kind of long term now, as we don't seem to be going back to offices anytime soon, is how we can make sure that we are a little bit structured so we aren't just being super unproductive and then not feeling happy with how we're using our time.
That's incredibly wise to compartmentalize. I completely agree with you. And I've been doing that the whole time I've been freelance. It's been absolutely necessary for, especially in a small space, to break apart the day and to designate your mindset based on what time of day it is and what you're doing. As an entrepreneur who is sort of riding the wave of COVID and what it has done to literally every industry on the planet, some certainly more than others. As an entrepreneur, is there any advice that you have for somebody who is doing their own thing and running their own business as to just kind of how to weather it, how to approach the monumental amount of change that has been thrown at you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I haven't mentioned, but I'm actually writing a book, which is out in January of next year. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's about female entrepreneurship. And it's I've interviewed hundreds of female founders for it. So and some of which quite recently. So I've heard a lot about how different companies have been kind of pivoting and managing this time. I think one thing I'd say for people that run small businesses or are self-employed, and they've perhaps found that their income has really dropped, or they're not able to operate their business in the way that they were previously, I think sometimes you need to kind of go backwards a little bit and think, what skills did I develop to create the thing that I created? And you might find that you have a whole host of really interesting skill sets, whether it's learning how to start a podcast, or it's how to build your following on Instagram, whatever it is, you may be able to teach it to someone else. So I think making that shift into whether it's consultancy or online events where you teach people, or coaching, this is the time to really kind of look at your personal skill set and figure out ways that you can monetize. And for a lot of people, although this time is really challenging, it's thrown up stuff that perhaps you had to learn, which is that you can't rely on one income stream, and you can't rely on one client or one job. And if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to have the mindset that stuff is always going to get thrown at you. That's the only given with being an entrepreneur, is that stuff is going to get thrown at you and it's going to be hard. Nothing else is certain. So it's kind of that jack in the box mentality of like, we get struck down and we come back again, and we're just resilient, and we look at ways that we can diversify, and we can kind of, I think there's benefits to this in a way for businesses, because it's making us more hardy. It's making us find ways to cope, and those strategies can be applied long term. So I wouldn't kind of panic. I think actually for me, it's been like, okay, this means that in the future, if something like this happens, we've got stuff in place, we've got process. So figure out what your kind of glossy business card is, and then kind of come at it with a really positive, resilient attitude.
Do you think that it is helping to alleviate fear over worst case scenarios, and alleviate fear of, well, this can't ever happen because it would be the worst thing ever? I think we're living a lot of the worst things ever, and we're totally here, we're doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I interviewed an anxiety specialist called Chloe Brotheridge, and we were talking about anxiety, and she said a lot of her clients who are the super anxious ones have felt better during this period, because they've kind of been faced with like, this is the worst thing ever. And then they're like, oh, okay, well, I've now done that. And a lot of our anxiety is around the unknown, and so many unknowns have happened. We've lost, like, for example, our whole plan income wise this year was based on festivals. We were going to do 4 this year. We obviously can't do them. So that was like, it was also my emotional fear of like, I love doing that, and it's a kind of sadness more than just the money. And once the worst happens, you're then like, okay, so now we get through that. And I think you're right, so much of it is the fear of the unknown, and once we actually sit in the realities of today, I think we actually feel stronger for it.
Absolutely. And the next time I am able to travel to London, I will schedule my trip around one of your festivals, because I would absolutely love to attend. I usually go to London about once a year, but not so much this year. So tell everyone listening how they can follow your work, keep up with you. Obviously, when the book comes out, please let me know and I will share it with this audience. But in the meantime, how can they follow what you're doing?
Thank you. Yes, for sure. So they can have a look at the site, which is abouttimemagazine.co.uk. And we're About Time Mag on all social media. And I'm at Jelly Malin on social. So Jelly is my childhood nickname that I never quite grew out of. And my mum's always like, you need to change it. It's not professional anymore. But when I was younger, everyone would say I was like Angelica from the Rugrats, which was a big program here. And she was very naughty. So everyone always thought I was naughty, and it made me very stressed out and traumatized as a child. So everyone calls me Jelly, and that's just kind of gone into my adult life.
Amazing. I will link to all of that below. Thank you so much for joining me. It was lovely to speak with you. And I really love what you're doing with digital community during this time. I think it's very inspiring, and I hope that more people do the same.
Amazing. Thank you for having me. I've loved it.